Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I thank you for listening today. The drug of the day today is going to be Vibegron. Brand name is Gemtesa. And this medication is a medication used for overactive bladder. It's relatively new, probably out in the last 2 to 4 years here. Dosing of this medication for overactive bladder, 75 milligrams once a day. So, pretty straightforward, no titration, which is can be an advantage or a disadvantage. No titration, no going to higher dose, but it's very simple if you're prescribing this medication to use in that respect. So, mechanistically, how does this drug work? How does it help overactive bladder? So, it is a selective beta-3 agonist, and if you remember previously, I have talked about mirabegron, so that'd be a good one to go back and review if you're, you know, on your urology unit in your pharmacology classes. You might want to go find that podcast as well at the reallifepharmacology.com website. And mechanistically, this drug works like mirabegron. It relaxes detrusor smooth muscle, which allows for greater urine storage in the bladder. Ultimately, that greater storage helps alleviate some of the signs and symptoms of overactive bladder, having to go to the bathroom all the time there. So, Vibegron is very selective, so that is great. So, if you remember some of our other beta agonist pharmacology, so beta 2 agonist, that's going to be on the lungs, it's going to help with breathing, that type of thing. Beta 1 activates the heart. If we stimulate or if we have an agonist at beta 1 receptors, that's going to increase heart rate and potentially blood pressure as well. So Vibegron, with that selectivity, hopefully only at beta 3, with its dosing, hopefully we're not causing any of those other effects on beta 1 and beta 2 receptors, particularly beta 1 and the cardiovascular issues there. I will talk a little bit about that and compare and contrast the adverse drug reactions coming up here with mirabegron and where and why this might be a little bit more advantageous in certain situations. With that dosing, what are a couple situations you might want to avoid using this medication? So, package insert recommendations, EGFR less than 15 mils per minute. It's not recommended to use this medication. Severe hepatic impairment as well. And primary reason, from what I could tell by the literature, it just really hasn't been studied in those patient populations to really know what to do with that. Administration with or without food, pretty straightforward. Again, once a day, one dose, give it with a glass of water. In patients, which overactive bladder tends to be an issue that happens as people age, so we do sometimes end up in situations where as those patients age, there may be swallowing difficulties or things of that nature. So this medication may be crushed and mixed in with applesauce. Somebody who works in the field of geriatrics, it's always nice to know that, that they're going to actually get the medication and it's still going to be effective and they're going to get adequate drug concentrations so we can make sure that we're assessing if that drug is working or not. Adverse drug reactions, really the percentages are pretty low. As far as some of the adverse drug reactions that were reported. So we're talking less than, you know, 5 or 10% pretty much for all adverse drug reactions. So with that said, any medication in my mind that's going to kind of help with overactive bladder symptoms, we do run the risk of when we hold that urine back, we can exacerbate urinary retention issues. So anyone that's got any type of kind of outlet obstruction, and in practice, probably the most common situation you're going to see is in males with BPH. So it could worsen urinary retention. So that's definitely something to pay attention to there. Dry mouth, GI upset, headache, all pretty rare, or pretty low percentages reported there. Rare skin reactions had been reported. And interestingly, there's really no issues reported in the literature, or at least minimal issues reported with cardiovascular concerns. So like raising blood pressure, again, that's that activation that we worry about on beta 1 receptors, increasing heart rate, increasing blood pressure, that type of thing. Mirabegron, I went and double checked, definitely has a higher risk of causing that. So if you've got a patient that's got, you know, variable blood pressures or very, you know, higher end blood pressures, that type of thing, maybe urinary anticholinergics, you know, like oxybutynin or, you know, tolteridine, maybe we can't use them for whatever reason, adverse effects. Mirabegron is probably more likely to worsen some of those hypertension situations versus Vibegron, which definitely, at least from the literature, has a lower risk for causing that. And I believe that's primarily due to less interaction with the beta 1 receptor and a little bit more selectivity than mirabegron for that beta 3 receptor. But again, it is something, even though it's not reported in the literature, you know, wacky things can happen with patients. You can have genetic variations or, you know, metabolism issues, or maybe you got somebody with, you know, poor renal function. And maybe that drug accumulates a little bit more in that patient for whatever reason. So I definitely still have it on my radar that if Vibegron concentrations probably got higher, it would probably lose some of that selectivity. So, you know, keeping tabs on that blood pressure and potentially pulse, it's definitely something that's in the back of my mind anyway, just knowing and understanding that mechanism, even if it's not reported really too much in the literature, which is great, certainly. So kind of continuing on that theme here, quick comparing, contrasting mirabegron versus Vibegron. So advantage is that once daily dosing, and really the starting dose is the therapeutic dose, or the dose that was studied in the literature there. So that can be a nice and easy thing. With that said, that may be a disadvantage as well, where you maybe want to titrate the dose, but, you know, we really don't have any literature to support that, versus mirabegron, which has a couple of different doses there. And then other big thing I see looking at adverse effect profile is Vibegron typically is probably going to cause a little bit less, at least according to the literature, of those cardiovascular adverse effects. So definitely a nice thing there. Some other pharmacokinetic parameters here I wanted to mention. So half-life, 31 hours. So that's kind of a no-brainer why it lends to once daily dosing. We've got a plenty long half-life there. Excretion, elimination, let's talk a little bit about that. So it is over 50% in the feces that it's eliminated. So we don't need to worry about kidney function quite as much when you've got that high of a percentage in the feces. 20% approximately is urine, and there is a minor CYP3A4 component as well where this drug is broken down there. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for any pharmacist board certification study material, definitely go check out meded101.com/store, STORE. Got a great list of resources from NAPLEX, Ambulatory Care, BCPS, Geriatrics, BCMTMS. Again, all those links, you can find meded101.com/store. I'll also put the link in the show notes page as well there. And if you're another healthcare professional, nurse, physician, med student, PA student, nurse practitioner student, recently released the Flippin' Pharmacology flashcards. Go check those out on Amazon. great resource, getting some nice ratings, some nice feedback from folks on them. So yeah, really nice resource that you can have kind of throughout your career or just to brush up on some things. And I really focused on most important things that you see in clinical practice and the most important things that you're likely to see on pharmacology and board exams throughout your career. So that was really my goal in creating those flashcards. So again, Flippin' Pharmacology flashcards, you can go check those out on Amazon. All right, last but not least, drug interactions. So I mentioned CYP3A4 as a minor pathway. Given the amount that's gone in the urine, the amount that's gone in the feces, I wouldn't worry about it. I wouldn't worry about CYP interactions with Vibragon, so that is definitely a nice thing for sure there. Really, from an interaction standpoint, the biggest thing that I would worry about is probably that urinary retention. So having additive effects on urinary retention. So I think of drugs with alpha agonist activity. So pseudoephedrine is a great example. And then, of course, any anticholinergic medication is going to cause or potentially contribute to urinary retention. So think of older antihistamines, hydroxyzine, diphenhydramine. Think of tricyclic antidepressants. They're highly anticholinergics. So your amitriptyline, your nortriptyline. And then obviously some of your urology medications. So oxybutynin, tolteridine, those are generally considered pretty highly anticholinergic and could certainly worsen that urinary retention risk. All right. Well, I think that wraps up the podcast for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, found it helpful, please do me a huge favor, leave a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. That helps us grow the podcast. Of course, share us, friends, colleagues, students that are going through pharmacology classes. Don't hesitate to let them know about the Real Life Pharmacology podcast. I certainly greatly appreciate that. It helps me in my goal of educating as many people as possible about pharmacology. And of course, if you want to track me down, you got suggestions, you can do that. Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCPS, BCGP on LinkedIn, or email mededucation101@gmail.com. I'm going to sign off for today. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.